And the interview continues with Dave Mackey in Cove, Oregon. It's December 17th, 2005. So you said that your weekend entertainment was driving around in the country. Because?
Because we wanted to have a place in the country where we had our own firewood. And I don't know why, but we wanted spring water. I guess it's because we had driven to Moss Springs for one place and drank the water coming out of a spring water, a pipe on the side of the road. Thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to have water like this? And that was one reason, I guess. And I grew up in the Black Hills where we had good water. And, you know, we just never did like city water. So anyway, we loved to burn wood. All we had was a fireplace in the grand, one in the basement and one upstairs, but we just loved firewood for burning. Not just to smoke up the place, but for the wonderful heat that a wood stove can produce. So we told an old timer out here, his name was Wayne Scott, and we told him the kind of place we would like to have it in the timber. And so one day we just happened to drive up Hafer Lane here and drove over to Carson Hafer's place, who is the next neighbor over, and just drove in there and drove back out. And went back home and called Wayne Scott and said, I found the place that we would really like to have someday, a place just like this. And he knew about it. And so it wasn't too much longer, a few months went by, and Wayne Scott called up and said, Dave, the neighbors, the Hafers over there, the fellow that owns that place, died this morning shoveling snow on the deck. Oh. I said, is that right, you know? So she's not going to stay there by herself. So I'll let a week go by or so, and you want me to call her? And I said, boy, you would. So he called her, and she said, nope, I'm not interested. You know, no, I'm going to stay here. Well, wasn't it? But a day or two later, we got a call from an attorney in Wallowa.
This was in the middle of winter. It was in February.
In February.
Snow everywhere. I mean,
we had deep
snow.
And this lady that lived here, Mrs. Gates, had an old friend living in the cabin who was helping her maintain the place and plowing out the road because they had a tractor with a plow on it. And the attorney called and said, I understand that you have an interest in the Gates place. Would you be interested in buying it? I said, well, yeah, if we could get it for the right price. So, well, would you like to talk about it? And I said, yeah, we'd like to see it first. And he said, well, okay, I'll arrange it for you. So we just drove out here, and we didn't even come. Did we come to the door and tell her we were here? We must have. Yeah, we told her we were here, and that we were the ones that were interested in it, but we'd like to walk around first. And so we wanted to see what the land was like, so we made a big loop. It was 25 acres, and so we walked up towards Mount Fanny and up to the top of the hill in the back on the south border and walked right on the border and just fell in love with the views and the property. And as you know, it was a warm spring day in March. It was early March. It was kind of starting to fall, you know. Anyway, it was so gorgeous. And it was just like a paradise to us, you know. And so I said, well, I guess we better look at the house. And so we looked at the house and figured, well, we'd really like the floor plan, you know. Just some basics about the place. We didn't look at it in too much detail, but enough to, the place is what got us so interested. We could do anything with the house. Move it off, build another one, or just keep it the way it is. And it was, you know, just fine the way it was. So we called him back and asked him what the place was worth, you know, what she wanted. And we came out and looked at it again and just figured all the things that need to be done to the place. And he said, well, she wants this amount of money, but we feel like we need to do this and this and this, and it's going to take, you know, about this much money. So we just deducted that from the total cost. all these projects that we're laying out there. We just deducted that. Would this be fair?
Well, actually, a few weeks went by because we didn't go for the first price. And about 6 weeks went by, and he called us back, and he said, are you still interested in that place? And we said, yes, we are. You know, if the price is reduced.
We can negotiate the price. Well, and that's the time that we spent figuring out what we could afford based on what we could get out of our house and the projects that needed to be done. Some of the things that were, you know, just had to be done.
Right.
Needed to be, not just one of these.
Now, so you've been here this whole time then?
Since 1975.
1975.
Yeah. And it's just been, we've had good offers on it from some people saying they'd like to live here. Well, you figure out a price. And I said, before I figure out a price, I said, if we could find a place that's as good or better, we'll consider it. So one spring vacation, we did this after how many years of living here? Maybe 10? 8 or 10 years?
Yeah, 12 maybe, 12 years.
This fellow came along who was from the East Coast, and he was pretty wealthy. He had an island with a house on it, and he wanted to make a place up here with yurts on it and take in people to the wilderness from our place. He said, your place is the only place that fits the description of what I want to do. So he got it on the real estate deal, and so we started getting calls from real estate. So I said, well, we'll go look. We spent our entire spring vacation looking all over the valley for something that would be as good or better. Nothing, absolutely nothing. For our price range, and I mean, there were some beautiful homes with no land. There were some nice places, but they were in a congested area. You know, trash all around the neighborhood, and a nice home that needed a lot of repair. You know, it was just like, it was just an impossible thing to accomplish. So we turned him down. I said, we just can't find him. Sorry.
We kept it.
So far, as long as my back holds up,
right,
and we can stay.
What
Because the algebra was hard, you know?
Me too. When, now you've been up here since 1975. You finished out your career with the school district. Mm-hmm. What things have you done in the, have you done any community service work or public service work in this area, either in the town, the county, or around that?
Well, really the only thing I've done here is I'm on the cold. Association. It's called Cove Community Association. I'm vice president of that.
What do they do?
Well, one of the goals is to serve the greater Cove area. You know, you've got your city hall, city council, but there's a need to have input in a different format than a city council meeting. Because, you know, they're more formal. And it's pretty hard to get in a word edgewise. You know, they're in there solving some problems, and there's always something going wrong in a city, you know. But with our group, it was started by John Van Schoenhoven and his wife Louise. And the idea is to get grants to make improvements in town. That's a big part of it. So I know he knew a lot about grant writing. He's been able to bring a lot of money in the cold.
And what do
for
you
different
do with it?
Community projects,
for example.
Well, for example, they're working on. We just finished working on a little community pocket type party. You know, had some picnic tables put together, and we're getting some barbecue put together, and it's going to be located. It's already located at the end of the soccer field down here in town. And just different needs of the community that might come up. And there, we made a big study of the Cove swimming pool because the goal was for the town to eventually buy out the Cove Hot Springs pool because we could see, you know, the folks that owned it were wanting to sell. And the whole town was concerned about the fact that, hey, if this gets sold to a private individual, the Cove community has lost the pool. And this is a historical pool, you know. you know, some millionaire could come in here, buy the land, build a dream house on it, and have their pool already done.
And make it private then.
And have a private deal out of it, you know. So we didn't want that to happen. So we had a big study done by architects who drew up some plans on how to remodel around the pool. The pool couldn't be touched without coming into new codes. So they just had some ideas to redo the locker rooms and add on a side for more room for, or like putting in a hot tub. Figure out ways to maybe use it more on a year-round basis. Maybe add camping facilities.
Do you think this idea will be realized then?
Well, it was purchased by a private person eventually here, at least about a year ago, a little over a year ago, who wants to keep it a community connected thing now. He wants it to remain for the community, not just himself. So he's done some remodeling already, and he's had all of our study to benefit from, you know. And
is this person sincere?
Very sincere.
Uh-huh.
And he's a helpful-minded person. He wants to have, like, maybe someday have some health reconditioning classes. And, you know, COVID is kind of becoming a retirement town in lots of ways. A lot of people want to stay here. And but we need housing for seniors. And so the COVID Community Association has been working with, you know, the Oregon state people for getting a HUD housing project started.
To keep some of your long-term residents.
Yeah, when people can't, see, people are that have grown up here, and they've had careers elsewhere, they're moving back. And then they get old, and then they can't take care of this little 10-acre plot that they have, or 5 acres or whatever. They have no place to go. And so some of these folks will fit in fine to a HUD project, but another project we need to get going is this senior housing, like some condos. And we're pushing for something that has some style that fits in the code, not something that looks like it belongs in Portland.
Right.
You know. So anyway, there's all these different projects that could be done, and there's no end to it.
How long have you served on this Cove Community Association, you say?
Let's see, this is my fourth year, I believe.
Probably.
Yeah.
Do you have plans to continue that?
Haven't decided yet.
Is it worthwhile? How often do they meet?
Once a month. Yeah. And it's a chance to meet some really nice folks in town. You know, since when we're up here, you know, we're just kind of like, you kind of miss out on things that go on. And it's just far enough to where you don't feel like driving down there every 2 or 3 times a day to go downtown and buy something or visit with somebody, you know, get wrapped up in our own little projects up here, keeping the wood stove stoked,
yeah,
or whatever. And it's easy to, you know, almost become a hermit if you wanted to.
Do you do any other community or social participation around the county, the community?
Not around the county. No. And for years I rotated gardens. And that was a way for me to go out and meet people.
You did what now?
I tilled gardens.
Oh,
garden
okay.
Spots. Or if somebody was going to build, I might till their soil so they could, you know, excavate easier and save the topsoil. Put in a big garden. I needed a tractor on my place, and to justify the expense of a tractor, I bought a tiller, and that was a way for me to earn money to pay for my tractor. So that
was that successful.
That was, I'm on my third tractor right now.
Do you still?
I finally gave it up
this
last year. I finally figured that I've had enough. I've eaten enough dust. I'm.
Was that a service that was needed?
Yes, because there was a young fella here. His dad was doing it, and the son was doing it for a while, but he was getting ready to go to college, and no one else was doing it, and there was a need for it. So it was a perfect opportunity to help me buy my tractor and then go out and till gardens and And it was fun because it was, I could have sold tickets the first day, well, the first summer I started tilling gardens. You pull in, and I had a Kubota tractor, and they were fairly new. I think I had the first Kubota in town. Well, there was another one. It was a two-wheel drive, but mine was a four-wheel drive. And I'd pull into a place, and people would just start walking in from the neighbors, three or four people, and they'd stand at the fence or come right up and watch that machine work. They just couldn't believe the machine, how it would till up the soil so nice. So, you know, it was fun, and I got to meet a lot of new people this way.
What would you typically charge for a field? Were these like backyard gardens?
Gardens for homes. Uh-huh. And some were really large, you know, up to, I did one field to plant trees in that was probably a good acre or two, you know, just to plant trees. But most of them were just really good-sized gardens. And some little tiny ones that were hard to get into, but if they had the fences right, it was easy to back in. And, you know, I could till a good-sized garden in, you know, 15 minutes and be done with it.
What would somebody be charged for that?
Oh, when I first started, I was charging about $18 an hour.
And so...
So, you know, for in a lot of these small gardens, it took me 15 minutes.
And you charge them $5.
$5 or $6. And, uh-huh. And it'd be some little old lady come out and hobbling out, you know, and just as poor as can be, you know. And what was interesting is the poorest people had their checkbooks ready to pay. The minute you pulled out of the field, okay, how much do I owe you? You know, and had their shaky pen. They couldn't wait to pay you. And so some of these folks that were having, okay, we'll see you next year, okay? And after a while, some of them were getting older, and they were such faithful people, you know, I'd do it for nothing. Because I got up to where I was charging. What did I charge the last time? About $40 an hour.
You started out at about 20 or 30, and then...
I started out at 20, and then, and you know, nowadays you got to charge about $50 an hour. I was up to 40, but nowadays you almost have to do 50. You can burn up, you know, a lot of fuel in 15 minutes, because you run them wide open, and I hit them two or three times, and the soil is just almost like gunpowder.
When you're done.
When you're done. Mm-hmm. A rotavator really does the trick.
Rotavator.
Yeah, it's called it's not a tiller. A tiller, you know, is slower acting.
Uh-huh.
And some of them are pretty fair, but...
What's the difference between a tiller and a rotavator?
A tiller you can't break into sod. For a rotavator, you can, you know, have the grass mowed down, and you can till sod and hit it three or four times. By the time you're done, it looks just like topsoil.
Uh-huh.
It really chews everything up, and, you know, it spins it, you know, I mean, it really throws it around fast.
Is that better for the garden as well?
Oh yes, it really mixes up. You know, they'll throw fertilizer in with it, or you'll make the grass and break it up, and then they want you to come back next week after they haul in manure on it to mix that up.
And so who took the business over when you retired then?
No one.
So what's going to happen come next spring when they need rotavating?
There's one guy that has a huge tractor will come in and do some bigger jobs, but I've broken so many gardens up to where they're easy to till now that they can go ahead and handle it themselves with a walk behind or tiller. Yeah. But there is still a need. Somebody could go around with a small tractor and probably build a business up again. But I just got so tired of it, I just said, no more.
Well, it sounds like a job where you have to move from place to place. Do you take the tractor and just drive it from
just
place
drive the
to
tractor.
Place? You wouldn't put it on a trailer.
No. And I never did get into that because, you know, it's a hassle to load the tractor.
Oh, yeah.
Tie it down and then go down this hill and then the port way back up here, you know.
Did you have any trouble doing this hill with the tractor itself?
No, since it's four-wheel drive.
Uh-huh.
There was no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was the time, you know. It took me a half an hour to get there.
Oh, 45. Full speed on that tractor.
Oh yes, about 12 miles an hour.
Okay, I see.
And then to come home, a lot of times I have, if I can just get this last customer, I'll be done for the week until next weekend. But here it was in the dark by the time I finished. And then that cold spring air coming off the mountain, where there's still snow on the mountain, I'd come home freezing to death, and, you know. That got old after a while, as age creeps up on you.
Yeah.
But I did. How many years did I do this? Must have been.
Well, you started doing it before Laura was born, didn't you?
Probably about 1970.
That was about at least 20 years.
About 1978 until 1995, maybe?
No, 2003.
I mean, 2003, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
25 years?
Yeah, 25 years. It was really fun. The only hard part was to get on to the next job, because there'd always be some conversation to get started. You know, how have you been?
Right.
You know, that was the enjoyable part.
I
haven't seen you since last year, you know, and you get up to date with all these people.
Yeah.
You know.
But you might have to repeat that from place to place to place to place each year then, right?
That's right.
Uh-huh.
And then
home in the cold.
Yeah. Would you like the fresh cookies?
Mm-hmm.
You need a drink?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then that started the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of good, you know, it's cold is a wonderful place. There are so many good people that live here. They're friendly and...
How many children do you have?
One daughter.
Laura.
Laura.
Who I know.
Who you know and works at the, she's the communications coordinator at the college.
Do you have grandchildren?
No grandchildren. Now, Laura just got married here a few years ago, so.
Uh-huh. Now, did she grow up and go to school here?
She grew up in Cove, and we homeschooled her.
Oh, you did?
For the first 6 years. And she went to a church school for 2 years and then went to high school for her last 4 years of school here in Cove. She graduated from Cove.
You can both chime in on this. Now, the homeschool is very interesting to me. When did you first start doing that with Laura? Was that
At kindergarten level.
At kindergarten level,
mm-hmm.
So would have been in the 70s.
Well, let's see, she was born in 81.
Oh, 81.
So about 1985 or 6.
Okay. My best statement on that was that may not have been a completely popular, it wasn't a fad to homeschool at that time, though it was never unheard of.
It was a controversial subject.
So,
and when I went to school, you're homeschooling? But Dave, what about the socialization? Was the first question that came up. Everybody was hitting us up. Yeah, but what about the socialization? So my answer was that Stanford University and Cornell University had made an intensive study about homeschoolers. They could not find one shred of evidence that their child was not socialized. Fact, it was just the opposite. The child grew up not in a caste system like the public schools are, where you just talk to first graders. You just socialize with the first graders. Oh, the second graders are too old. The fourth graders, you know, don't even get close to them. They'll beat you up or whatever. You know? I mean, it was just, you know, the stigma of not socialization with out of your grade level. And then not only that, but it's kind of hard for kids to talk to adults. Where a homeschooler learns to talk with anybody. They're at ease with young and old and all levels. It doesn't make any difference what age you are. But they found out that they... And then the tests start coming out, how well they were succeeding. And, oh, there was a member of a radio announcement by Paul Harvey, you know, on the radio, that in Caldwell, Idaho, where the potato plants are, there was a homeschooler down there that's now a millionaire because during his homeschooling time, he wanted to be an engineer, and so he went to visit. The parents took him to visit for a field trip. which, you know, field trips, you can go anywhere you want when you homeschool. You're not always limited to the textbook to learn about how the world works. So he was fascinated with that potato plant and the manufacturing and all the machinery. And an engineer got a hold of him and he said, you know, we're trying to figure out a way to slice this potato and cook it in a better way. But he invented some kind of a machine that slices potato differently and roast it differently. I think that's what, kind of like slicing bread. But anyway, he was part of the engineering of this new machine and became a millionaire over it. They're doing a senior year project in homeschooling. So anyway, there were things that were coming out, and it's taken a long time for the public to accept. But when we were doing this, it was not very acceptable.
There were a few families around the valley that were doing it, but not nearly as many as in the last few years.
And it was nice for us because, you know, the bus couldn't come up here. We had to take her down there school in the wintertime, you know, the bus could never make it up here, and so it was a hassle, you know, to take her to school. Yeah.
And was that the reason you did that, though?
No, that wasn't the real reason. It was just we had found out by reading and how well the kids can excel for their education, the value of the education that they're going to receive, without all these pressures, peer pressures that go along, and having to be involved with everything, you know, and sports was one of them, you know. Sports are fine, but neither my wife and I have been sports oriented other than skiing. But as far as basketball, football, and going to all the games and get all wrapped up in that stuff, it's just like it's never been an interest in our life. And so it wasn't a priority to make sure our daughter wasn't into everything. Right. And some of it, you know, wouldn't have hurt, but.
Well, in high school she had the opportunity, and she was more interested in journalism and
photography
and, you know, and she was in the girls' volleyball team.
So you said K to 5? You did at home at first grade?
I think it was through sixth grade.
So what opportunities, how did she socialize then during that time? You've talked about they can talk to anybody, basically, in terms of general socialization, but...
Well, she started taking violin lessons when she was 4 years old, and there was a little group. She had a private lesson for, I don't know, 15 minutes, and then there was a group for a half an hour, which for other kids her age. She did that once a week, and then we had school, or church, and there were, you know, other children at church, and she spent one day a week with her grandparents who lived in LeGrand. What else did we do?
Well, if I wanted to take a day of business leave, you know, and go visit someplace, she was always with us. You know, we could go shopping in the Tri-Cities, we could visit some folks out of town, we could go visit an industry or a factory or something, just to show her how people make a living and just do things together.
When she got a little older, I took her on field trips. We went over to the Union Museum, and we went through the Pendleton Woolen Mills.
Went to the Whitman.
We went through the
mission over there, Walla Walla.
Yeah, we did a trip with another homeschooling family on that one, and we went to the, there's a color press over there, a printing company that we went through, and what else did we do?
Well, there was something to do with like a science class experiment, you know, you can just take off and go visit somebody that does this for a job and ask them questions and get some help without worrying about, well, you only have an hour, you won't be able to make it because you've got a math class coming up or you've got this coming up, and, you know, and oh, we can't, the school doesn't have insurance for you to take your own car, you have to go into a school bus, you know, we have to have, you know, teachers, you know, take field trips, but yet,
right.
Some teachers can't because there's not the money for every teacher to go on field trips.
The Adventist Church School started having a science fair in the spring about when she was in about fourth or fifth grade, and they invited her to participate. And she did she had a feather collection, and so she identified the feathers and made up poster boards, you know, about them and everything. I think that was her first project, so that was kind of a different experience for her that she enjoyed, and she did a water testing experiment the next year.
Yeah, she tested the water in the creek, see how pure it was, you know, and then this is when Shackley was really popular. Shackley cleaning, home cleaning projects.
Uh-huh.
And we heard that you could put a drop of basic H in the water and it would kill the E. coli.
Yeah, it would kill E. coli.
It would purify it. And so she said, I'm going to see if this works. Or she would, you know, I just got to prove this one out. So she took some tests and took it in and had a professional company in the brand test it, and by golly, it made the water pure.
It did.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so that was interesting for her.
Did you follow a curriculum outline? Did you use a particular company, or?
I used about two different companies. I don't know if I can remember the names of them now.
There was one from Washougal.
Okay, we're finishing up the interview with Dave Mackey. It's still December 17, 2005. And we were talking about using a curriculum outline by the Moores of Washougal.
Yes, I got some of my books from them, and there was another company.
We drove over to Washougal.
Actually, we went to a seminar over there.
And they had books.
Also, and there was another company that I don't remember the name of, but I'm sure they're still in business, because they had a lot of textbooks. And so I kind of used books from both of those companies, but I made up my own curriculum with those books.
And the Mennonites, didn't they get books from one of these companies?
Yeah, they have a company that puts out books that some homeschoolers use. And I kind of geared it to her interests and focused, you know, on things she was interested in.
Knowing what, you know, the requirements are for the state, you know, the things they have to learn to graduate from high school, well, you know, you just kind of go by that. She needs to know some science and needs to know some math and, you know, all these areas, but then you can learn that and more. You know, if it was time to go out and get leaves to look at, you just had to walk out the door and start looking for leaves or bugs or, you know, the outdoors is right there.
And then when they started doing the testing, I don't think that was the first two or three years, but they were, what do they call those tests they do every spring?
The standardized test,
something like that. Yeah.
SAT.
Yeah, I took her down to the Cole School just to do the test down there, and that worked out good.
She passed them.
Mm-hmm.
And there was never any hassles either. Like, you know, like, what are you doing this for? You know, no one made us feel weird or like we were dissenters or.
Now,
anything, you know.
Was there a procedure to go through? Did you have to submit a plan to the local superintendent or anything like that?
No, but I saved. I made up a plan for every day, or one that I followed in general, and I saved all that stuff for quite a few years, just in case there was ever any question about what we had covered,
right.
You know.
And yeah. Not all homeschoolers do a good job either. I mean,
that's what I've heard.
You know.
Yeah, some of them are just playtime all day long.
Well, and not all school teachers in the public school system do a good job. Look at how much playing goes on in certain classes.
Sure.
You know, all the time. Mm-hmm. Education, I watched it change a lot because the education system has gotten to where the kids are in control. If they don't like a teacher, they don't take your class unless it's a required. So the electives, you know, you really have to be, a sociable person and friendly person with your kids. You have to have them so they like you as a teacher. And still you need to teach them something that's important, but not make it so difficult that they can't make it, you know. Like only the few can make it through your class. You do have to bend your back and have different levels.
So popularity actually is sort of
a popularity contest in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when did Laura go back to public school then?
At the beginning of her freshman year.
Well, so she did do K to 8.
Oh no, she went to the Adventist school in La Grande for
2 years,
7th and 8th grade.
Okay.
Yeah. She graduated from there.
And that's also a private school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I thought it'd be a good balance.
Was she able to compete with others when she entered 7th and 8th grade? Was she able to take right off?
She actually skipped a year because the class that, I think it was the 6th grade, the class that she was going to go into had mostly boys in it, and she didn't, you know, like that idea. And so she said, Mom, couldn't I go into the 7th grade? And I said, well, I'll talk to the teacher. And so he gave her some tests, and he said, she's fine for 7th grade if she'll do some boning up on math this summer, which we did. And so then she went into 7th grade. She actually didn't start 1st grade till she was 7.
Well, the research that we read at the time,
so,
and it's still pretty true, is that the child really isn't ready for school, you know, based on the laws, you know, you will go to school at 6 years old.
Right.
But, you know, a child really isn't ready for learning until they're about 10 or later.
Well, especially boys, but there's exceptions.
They've had studies where they've started the kid out when he was, 16 years old, and they complete the entire 12 years of school in just a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
They just fly through it. They've had so many practical experiences, especially like a farm kid.
Yeah.
That was able to learn math, mm-hmm, in the field, counting corn, or, you know, in a garden with mother,
mm-hmm,
and then working with dad on figuring, calculating all kinds of farm problems,
right,
you know?
So she was 13, a little over 13, when she graduated from 8th grade, because of that year there, mm-hmm, and that put her right back with the rest of her peers in high school for her freshman year.
Then she completed high school normally,
mm-hmm,
9 to 12,
mm-hmm,
here at Coe.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
She had a wonderful English teacher down here, and that's really where she has got her start for her journalism and her photography.
Mm-hmm. Who was that teacher?
Mrs. Rager.
Mm-hmm. Jenny Rager, she had for the first 2 years of high school. Well, she was an excellent teacher.
And she wanted to get into journalism, you know, which usually wasn't available to freshmen or sophomores.
It was called something else, but it was journalism.
It was an upper-level class, but it was like the only thing available in a small school for that time. She didn't have any, there was a choice problem or something.
But anyway, she asked
if she could get in there, and she, you know, they reluctantly let her in there, but found out very soon that she was very capable, and right off the bat, the seniors were lazy, and it, pretty soon Laura was in charge of the journalism program.
They were asking her how to do things, but in the church school, in the private school, there had been a volunteer teacher. Actually, this gal was taking education at the university, and she used that school, you know, for her practicum or whatever they call it. And she had started a kind of a journalism program with the 7th and 8th graders. And there was another volunteer that came in and taught them keyboarding.
Huh.
And so she really gained a lot from both of those people in keyboarding and the journalism aspects, because they put out a little newspaper every month or something like that, and that was her introduction to that kind of thing, and so she really had a good start to prepare her for that journalism class in high school.
I forgot about that.
Actually, the fellow that came in and taught the keyboarding owned a computer store in La Grande. Beto, that's his first name. He doesn't do it now, but
used to be a computer store in the Grand.
And they still live out in the valley. And then Kim Kelsey, she lives over in the Walla Walla area now. And I think she is teaching, because she graduated. And she was the one that did the journalism projects with the kids. So, yeah. Have to give them a lot of credit.
Well, that's good. Were there
any organizations or associations for homeschool parents to interact with in the Valley area here?
Yeah,
I believe there was
some things going on, but I don't think
we didn't really get involved. She continued with her violin all these years, and
you know,
and she played with the youth orchestra when she was in 6th, 7th, and 8th, maybe 9th grades too.
Yeah,
when they started that up at the university.
What were you going to say?
You know, Mr. Herman, that teaches physics here, Tom Herman.
I don't know him. I think his brother is it that just, isn't the brother that taught chemistry also that's retired now?
Oh, no, that wasn't,
Is that a different?
No relative.
Okay, all right.
Different Herman.
Okay.
But he's been taught physics, but his wife was a violin teacher.
Laura's violin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I see.
For later.
I see.
For the later years.
She started out with Judy Seidel.
Uh-huh.
The first
Judy Seidel taught violin.
Yeah.
Tim Seidel's mother.
Used to be a nurse.
Yeah. That's right. We talked about that.
Yeah, Laura really enjoyed taking lessons
really
from her.
That's really interesting, Ashley. Yeah. I'm gonna get another stick of wood in the stove.
So
I think it's full.
Go ahead.
I lost my Okay, your very first stop when you came to LeGrand was where?
At 24 Flavors.
House 24 Flavors. Was Mr. House still
He was behind the counter, and he was standing there bossing the two gals, making sure every move was perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, now you want to make sure you put the napkins like this, and, you know,
yeah.
Take your scoop like this.
Yeah.
You know, set the table like this. He was just, you
know, hear him coaching.
Well, he was kind of coaching all the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, yeah, I'm sure he tried to teach them before, but he was continuing the coaching element all the time. I think he was probably a hard guy to work for. But I mean, the place was spotless, you know. And when I drove into town, I was hungry. And that's where I had my first hamburger in the van.
I share the same exact thing that you said, because I came to LeGrand in 73 with classmates of mine from here who were going to Blue Mountain in Pendleton.
Oh, yeah.
And that was one of our first stops. Have you been to Mr. House? No, I haven't. Oh, we got to stop. But what you tell me is the same thing that I remember, is that it's very exacting routine at spotlessly clean. Have you been in there since they reopened it?
Yeah.
I don't know that it's as clean
it's
as he would have it.
No.
As he would have had it.
Plus there's no homemade ice cream.
Not really.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I want to thank you for the interview. I think there is a lot of valuable stuff in here about what takes place here in Union County. Thanks a lot, Dave.
You're welcome.